We arrive here today to debate at social distances from each other.
There's no doubt that the old politics of the two-party system is now gone and over.
An equal partnership, there would have to be a parity of esteem, and we'd have to work in partnership together.
We're very reluctant to say what's red lines, but we do have to take climate seriously.
There's going to be constant criticism, there's going to be a lot of disappointment, and whoever goes into government is going to be unpopular.
Okay. Hello, I'm Maggie Doyle, and you're very welcome to a special edition of the Your Politics podcast with Sandra Hurley of our political staff. And also joining us in the politician's chair this week is Green TD for Dunleary and Minister of State for at the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform, Oisín Smith. You're very welcome, Oisín. We were not supposed to be here, I suppose, because we did an end of term podcast about 3 weeks ago, yes, 4 weeks ago, just the end of July thereabouts, when the Dáil was taking its summer recess. But with events, my dear, we are back. So it's good to be back. But let's talk, I suppose, about why we're back. The reason for that is that the Dáil is actually returning early from summer recess next Wednesday, we believe, will be the first day of its sitting. And really, it's all because a number of politicians, senior politicians, went to a golf dinner in Connemara. And the fallout of that, and it was only a week ago, but things happen very quickly in politics, Oisín, as I don't know, are you learning that as you go, or did you know that before, that stuff can happen very quickly and the fallout of stuff can have a big impact?
I knew what I was getting into. You know, when I went into politics first, one of my relatives said to me, why would you bring that on yourself? And, you know, that's, I mean, I know what happens. I know that it's always intense and it's up and down.
I suppose you were hoping for a longer break, were you? Because you weren't because the Dáil wasn't due to come back until the 15th of September.
Yeah, so it's not really a break in that I would have been in. I think most ministers would take the approach that this is a great opportunity to go into the office and not have so many media interviews and not be appearing in the Dáil, and you can actually have meetings with people and get things done. So I did go and do the Greenway for a few days and went to Cork for a couple of days, but mostly we're in the office every day.
Okay.
And you're just thinking, this is great, this is so productive. So, but then it just became clear that we had to bring the Dáil back early. So it's coming back 2 weeks early, and I think we're starting next Wednesday as the first session. And, you know, I guess The it's not so much the golf gate, I guess, that we're coming back for as the schools, because that's really the, in a way, I think golf gate was a reaction to the anxiety about the return to school. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of scrutiny over how the return to school is going to go.
That's interesting that you say that, because I don't think I've heard that yet, that a kind of a relationship between the fallout of golf gate and just the general anxiety that so many people are feeling about going back to school. Are you kind of making the connection there then between, I suppose, what people are giving up and what people are doing and what they're saying at home to their kids about, you know, all the things that they have to do, the hand washing and the sanitising and all these new rules that are in place, and yet then we have these politicians breaking the rules.
Yeah, and also the spike in cases, the second spike. So I mean, children haven't been in school since March, you know, so it's been this huge long break. They're anxious about it. There's a huge set of new rules. The parents are anxious about it. The teachers are anxious about it. Then there's an increase in cases. And then, you know, there are new restrictions come in. And then the next day, people are appearing to just blithely ignore the rules or feel that they're above the rules, and clearly that just turned into an explosion.
It was quite a bold statement from the three leaders, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Green Party, your own leader, and of course the government, to say that Phil Hogan had to reconsider his position. Was that decision to come out with that statement to really put the pressure on something that was discussed widely, or, you know, do you think that it was the three people mentioned that decided that they had to do that?
Oh, of course, there were discussions amongst all the TDs. I think people were really angry about it and just felt, again, it's just a distraction. You work really hard on something, and then something like this appears out of the side and takes away all the work that you've been doing. And it went much further than saying he had to reconsider his position. Eamon Ryan went on Morning Ireland yesterday and said he should resign, and then he did resign. So, and I guess it must be at first, is it? I mean, as a commissioner ever, and certainly it's very rare.
The Maltese commissioner, I think, had resigned his position a couple of years previously. But and then just the fallout from that, because now, of course, the talk has turned to what happens next. It is going to be a Fine Gael nominee that goes forward to Ursula von der Leyen. But there are implications as to who that person or people will be, because it could mean a fallout for the cabinet, because people like Simon Coveney's name, for example, has been mentioned. Presumably that would only be if Ursula von der Leyen has said, OK, you can keep trade, but we have to have a big enough name for it. Is that something that you're hearing?
I'd say we'd be keen to keep trade. It's one of the top two with competition of the two main ministries, or the most powerful ones. We're at this critical moment with Brexit. We would like to have an Irish person there. Who's going to be chosen, I don't know. And I think we'd probably be dealing with Ursula von der Leyen and saying, how do we retain that position? How do we avoid a reshuffle of the commission? So I have no idea who's going to be chosen for that position. But you'd expect it to be somebody who's really competent and who, you know, certainly in that area, who's technically able to do it and who's not going to get themselves in trouble.
Could I just ask a question about the choreography and the coordination between the three party leaders?
Yeah.
On Saturday night, we had that really strong statement calling on Phil Hogan to consider his position. But that statement came from just the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste there. Eamon Ryan's name wasn't on it. Now, he was on the statement that came out, I think it was either Tuesday or Wednesday. So why wasn't Eamon Ryan's name on that?
I would imagine that was a typo. I know that he was meeting them all weekend, so... I mean, I know that the party leaders, and that wasn't reported. So
but it wasn't issued in their three names, which seems odd.
It would have been agreed, and it would have been agreed as well with the TDs as well. So I think I didn't see the written statement, but certainly it was certainly agreed. There was Saturday and Sunday they were meeting. And I'm sure they wouldn't willingly spend all weekend talking about something. And
because I suppose on Monday the Taoiseach went on today with Claire Byrne and didn't quite say that Phil Hogan needed to resign. Now, the housing minister, Dara O'Brien, had told me on Morning Ireland about two hours earlier that, yes, Phil Hogan should resign. So it was kind of mixed messages. But I suppose ultimately Phil Hogan has resigned. Could he have done anything for us not to be in this position? Or do you think that the moment his name was attached to that golf dinner, he had to go?
No, I don't think it was anything he could have done. And I think that it was one of those stories where if it had just been one transgression in one area or something, that might have been one thing. But as more and more details about the story and his itinerary, his sort of tour began to come out, and, you know, he had to present a full list of where he'd been. And then people seemed to be ringing in and saying they'd seen him at other places. At that point, it just became... There were more and more reasons why he couldn't stay, and it became more than just an issue of a politician misbehaving. It actually became a situation where certainly I feared that the public would be less willing to accept the restrictions, less willing to show solidarity to obey the guidelines if it was shown that somebody. Like Phil Hogan, somebody in a high position of power and influence, didn't have to follow them and had no consequence for their actions and was unaccountable. And so it looked like a real. It looked like a real to me. I thought it was possible that there would be very little sanction for him, because traditionally commissioners are independent of their nation state, and you don't want a country. Trying to dislodge its commissioner simply because it's changed government and there's a new person in and they don't want the old party having it. So there's the strong independence for commissioners. So it is a historic and a major move that he actually was shifted into resigning.
Huge problems now, because like we said there, so first of all, the government has to come up with two names, a man and a woman. That's what Ursula von der Leyen wants. If it is somebody like, let's say, a Simon Coveney, so a cabinet member, you're talking about then a reshuffle, while you've also got the empty position of the agriculture minister to try and fill. And yet we're only so many days still into this new government. I mean, it's been tough, hasn't it? That first, whatever it is it 50, 60 days or something that we're in?
Well, it hasn't been boring, has it? You know, I mean, it's provided enough for the media.
For us, so yeah,
it's been great for you.
It's been very eventful.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Have you found it entertaining?
I wouldn't say entertaining is not the word, but you know, there's so much going on every day, fully engaged all the time. It's a great job to be doing. I just feel it's really, really meaningful, and you're working on all these things. And
but do those kind of issues?
There's never a moment where you're thinking, "What led you now?"
No, but the issues then that cause the problems, and I suppose, like you mentioned a while ago, you know, that they take the focus then off the good work that you're trying to do mm-hmm. in a department or in your position as a junior minister.
But I also said it was more than just a trivial scandal. It's something that could actually affect the response to the coronavirus amongst the public. And the fact that he has suffered a complete and unusual sanction is, I think, will actually strengthen the position now, or strengthen the idea that the sense of solidarity, the idea that we're all in this together. We're not all in this together if people can just break the rules and blithely get away with it.
But let me ask you then about another issue that we had last week, because it was around the time the golf dinner happened on the Wednesday night. Previous to that, on the Tuesday, we had kind of mixed messages coming for a number of days then from the government about the new sanctions, the new restrictions, the number of people that could or couldn't attend an outdoor event, an indoor event, a cultural event, a cinema. Were they open? Were they not? That went on for a few days. And that people were very frustrated about that as well. So not only did they have the anxieties of the things like going back to school or certain businesses not being opened, it was then the confusion because there wasn't a clear and coherent message coming from government. And people are very frustrated about that. So when there is a new raft of measures, how do you get it right? How do you do it better?
Okay, I think you're absolutely right. So unlike Phil Hogan, who says I don't accept that, I think you're right on that. When the cabinet decides a set of new measures that apply to everybody and are really significant, they have to be absolutely crystal clear. And when they're being reported, you don't want the headline the next day to say confusion over new measures. You want it to be absolutely black and white, crystal clear what it is. And if that means that it takes another 24 hours to work out exactly what the message is, then so be it. And I think that sometimes the cabinet meetings they're looking at this numbers coming in from NPHET, and they feel it's a matter of life and death, and they have to make a decision immediately. And I think that all the cabinet have learned from this that their messaging has to be absolutely clear.
Because the press conference, was it Tuesday? The press conference was, and it was delayed by 3 hours. I'm trying to think of my days now. I can't remember everything.
Of last week.
It was delayed by 3 hours. Now, I mean, we've all been waiting for press conferences to happen. And if it's an hour late, you're kind of thinking, oh, come on. But 3 hours seemed to be
a lengthy, argumentative cabinet meeting.
That's what we heard.
We're led
as well
to believe. Much discussion.
Well, it's easy to be wise in retrospect. But I think that, you know, in retrospect, that they shouldn't have had a they shouldn't,
okay.
shouldn't have had a
they should have waited
do it the next
hours.
Day until they 100%. And everyone was able to explain exactly what the new rules were and why they were there any inconsistencies. Because, you know, you produce all your new rules and somebody says, well, how come you can have this meeting but you can't have that meeting, and why does this make sense, and so on. And to be fair, the chief medical officer did come out and make a video and attempt to clarify
because
all
he
those
had
things.
To. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he had to because the politicians hadn't done the correct job the day before.
Yeah. Well, he did that, and really, I looked at it and thought, well, that's what should have come out. Not you know, you need to have very clear messaging.
I mean,
it's
a good idea. It's a lovely idea, Oisin, to say, you know, have 24 hours between a big important meeting that everybody knows is happening, but you know that the papers are still going to be full of it because that's what happens. You know, stuff leaks, we hear of stuff, and then it's almost worse because then it's like there's a delay and they're scrabbling around to try and get the message around about. So, like, it's a nice idea, but it's not going to happen like that, is it, the next time around?
So you could also say that a decision on something that's technical and requires a new set of guidelines to be written shouldn't be written at a cabinet meeting, but should be written by a subcommittee. And, you know, the time that's required for that, and then it goes to the cabinet.
So you agreed then? You agreed with the Taoiseach, because he had an issue, didn't he? We hear that there wasn't a subcommittee before the full cabinet.
So I think that it is important that detailed work gets done at a subcommittee, and that the cabinet is for the most part, they have a lot of things to they have a long list, long agenda that covers everything in the whole country. They can't be, they're not a working group, a committee that kind of writes guidelines, and it's risky if they are writing legislation or guidelines on the fly, and that should happen at committee.
I want to talk about it because you're, like I mentioned, Minister of State at the Department of Public Expenditure. So and reform. There's a budget coming at some point soon in the autumn. Do we have a date yet for the budget?
No.
Not quite, no.
But it's, I guess it's something that involves all departments, and it's, you know, it's the centre of focus at the moment.
I mean, you know, aside from, I suppose, a number of years ago, this budget will be probably one of the most talked about. It's been a very strange year with a pandemic, businesses on their knees, people concerned about their future. We're being told by the WHO we could be in this for another 2 years potentially. So must be a strange time to be working on the finances of the country.
It's going to be a very unusual budget. I mean, I guess that at the start of the year, the expectation was that the budget would be in surplus. And the now we know approximately 30 billion euros has been would be the deficit. So, you know, we've switched from one extreme to another. The state has become much more involved in the economy than it was before. There's a lot of people are depending on the state for income, and there's huge intervention going on. And I guess there's been also a kind of a mind shift amongst internationally about the role of the state, about how economics works, about what our rules should be within the EU on fiscal rectitude and everything else. So it's a very different year from previous years. It's not sort of, oh, well, we're going to do the same as last year, plus 1% or something. And we've also got the public sector pay round coming up so this autumn. So, you know, between all those things, there's a lot of challenges, and the budget will be really important and really new and really different.
How did the Greens flex their muscles in government? We've seen in, you know, you're getting used to the mechanics of being in a three-party coalition. We saw what happened to the Greens the last time. You're coming up to the budget. Should the Green, is it going to emerge that the Greens pushed for something or they vetoed something? We saw that in terms of the stimulus package that the Greens were told, you know, shot down the idea of a cut in capital gains tax. You know, are you going to play the clever politics here and play to your base by making it known that the Green has wins in government?
So, I mean, it's not about playing games and playing to your base. We're actually trying to transform economy and society in a green way, and we have this program for government, which is 50,000 words long. So we've a huge set of objectives to get through. We've got agreement in that over various items that will be over various expenditure items and how the budgets will be done and so on. So there are some aspects to that. And we'll certainly, of course, we'll be having debates and so on internally with the other parties over what happens, what goes into the budget, and you know that's part of what happens. Certainly, I was happy with what came out of the stimulus package, and that was all about how do you help businesses get back, how do you help people who are stuck, how do you get people back into education, how do you deal with the coronavirus with a large injection of money. So, you know, I think that we wanted to influence that and see that the recovery was done in a green way. So, you know, if we weren't there, it could have been a car scrappage scheme or something, or, you know.
And we know the Greens are very democratic, but when you look at, it's going to be difficult to get things done for the Greens, because you look at already within a month we had a minister abstaining on a government bill, one TD, a Green TD voting against it. What was seen as a very slight sanction, 2 months of speaking time taken away when the Dáil wasn't sitting. How are the Greens going to get some stuff done? And also, how soon before one Green TD goes overboard?
How do you mean overboard?
Well, one person says they can no longer be in the party, or, you know, that they simply, maybe they can't vote for the budget. We know that it's going to be tight this year. You mentioned that already. You know, do you think by the end of the year you'll still have 8 Green TDs?
We have 12.
No. Okay, have 12 good point, you've 12, yeah.
So I would hope by the end of the year we have 12 Green TDs or more if anybody else wants to join us from another party. So no, I have no expectation that people are going to leave, but it can happen to any party at any time. And there is attrition goes on during the course of a government, and, you know, people leave and whatever. And as you said, there are by-elections and somebody might go to Europe, who knows. So, you know, there's all of that. I'm expecting that we got a really solid mandate from our membership to implement this program for government. We got three quarters of the membership, or 76%, said this is the program we want you to do. So we've been mandated to do that, and all of the TDs after that decision was made, on the record, said that we are going to work to implement this program for government. Every single one of them. So I would expect that that's what's going to happen. We're going to work.
And so no more abstentions then.
I hope certainly not. I mean, like when you're in the government, you have to vote for the government. That's what the basic rules are, you know.
Did you have a word?
Did I have a word?
With your colleague?
Yeah, of course I spoke to her. Of course I meet them all the time. Mm-hmm. We have parliamentary party meetings and I speak to them individually.
Okay. I want to talk about the fact that I suppose you were a new TD back in February, so you're 6 months now into the Dáil, into Leinster House. Mm. What would you say, difficult to ask you to put this into one answer, I suppose, but what have you learned about national government that you might, you said you knew what you were getting into when you got into politics in the first place, but has anything surprised you about being in Leinster House?
Look, I mean, I came in and immediately what we did was we sat down and started negotiating with people to make government. We started sat down with Sinn Féin and Soc Dems and everybody else and started working on that. And got right into policy. So we were in that, and then a pandemic comes along. So, and then everybody was told to go home, and it became very difficult to, not just the physical separation of people, but the whole focus of everything had to be on dealing with the pandemic and avoiding a calamity. So we were looking at the TV, and we could see the news coming in from Italy that there were bodies sort of couldn't get into the ICU, and we could see that there was a possible bloodbath coming, and we had to do everything we could to avoid it. And so there was a strange suspension of party politics, where we just all rode in behind the government, and all the other parties did too, and the public did too, and the media kind of did too. You know, there was a much less scrutiny, and I think finally at the end of that, I think I could see that the media and the politicians, their patience was beginning to wear thin when they were beginning to get ignored.
Just as you were coming into government,
yeah, towards the end. Well, no. I'd say in about June, there was a lot of grumbling from media and politicians that they were just basically being ignored, and that the caretaker government was just running the ship, and as if they were a majority government and just doing whatever they wanted. So I guess that's a very unusual experience in the Dáil.
Have you enjoyed your time so far?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, it's been really interesting and really meaningful. And you're working on things. The great thing about politics is people contact you and they have a problem and you solve it for them, and they're delighted. And it's a personal thing. And or you change the rules on something. You actually manage to legislate in some way that leads to people getting to a large benefit. But you know that you've helped society in some way, but also you're personally dealing with people who are. Whatever it's happening, they're getting housed, or they're getting their job back, or they're getting their college course.
And apart from that, localised politics then, because you're a junior minister, so you're working in a department you weren't in before, I suppose. So what's that side of things like? You know, you're working now with civil servants who've been working in the same department for maybe a long time. And I'm just wondering, how did you find that? Has anything surprised you about that?
Yeah, look, I've been to sort of junior school for politicians, which is the council. And then you go on and you go into. So it's in the council, there are council officials, they're the civil servants, they're the permanent people who run the place. And if you're not careful, they will just make all the decisions for you. And I'd imagine it's the same in the government. If you go in there and you just allow it to happen, then you're not going to have any influence, and it could just all tick over.
So you've been challenging the civil servants in the department, have you?
I've been working with them cooperatively,
but
the first thing I did was look at the legislation and see exactly what powers I had, because that's what I remember from the council, was that if you didn't look up exactly what powers you have, they would be you would just lose them. You would just cede them to people who knew the rules better than you did, because they'd been around longer. Mm-hmm. So and I know that the life expectancy of a minister is short, typically 3 years, I think, on average. So, you've got this short period of time to actually achieve something, have something meaningful, make some changes. And the last thing you want to do is have a situation where you know, you've been there for a number of years and the civil servants have done what they wanted to do.
You mentioned there that you went on a family holiday cycling. Have you got a back to schooler this time around as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, in secondary school. Okay. And, you know, we got a list of all the rules for what has to happen when they go back. And I'd say maybe 20 pages long, really, really detailed. You look at this and go, wow, there's a lot of work to study this. I've got to see all the things that the child has to do and all the places they've got to be. And it's a complete reorganization. They can't go for lunch at the same time. They can't arrive for school early. They've got to do this, got to do that. And a lot of work obviously went in from the principal and from the teachers to do that, like a huge amount. And I think any parent reading that would have so much respect for the work that's been done. And I didn't see the Minister for Education on TV the other day, but I heard that she gave a very convincing performance about it. And I imagine that she has worked extremely hard on it too. And I think that people's confidence in the back to school is greatly increased. I think there's definitely a feeling that a lot of work has gone into this. People have tried to foresee in every way how you can reduce the risk. And I think that a lot of parents were really keen for their children to get back to school, but to do it in a safe way.
Back to the Dáil for you next week. So good luck with that. And thank you so much for making time to come in to speak to us this afternoon. Dunleary TD and Minister of State at the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform, Oisín Smith. Sandra, we've a few minutes left, so I just want to quickly go through some other business, I suppose, with you. We covered Phil Hogan and the ramifications of his resignation, but somebody else, of course, who was at that golf dinner was Seamus Wolfe, the former Attorney General. You've been finding out a little bit about the report that's being done by Susan Denham with regard to his future, because he's now a Supreme Court judge.
Yes, well, I suppose, yeah, as soon as it came in last night that Phil Hogan was resigning, the realisation, I suppose, in political and in legal circles was this put the spotlight even more on Seamus Wolfe. Now, the expectation from early on was that he clearly doesn't want to go. He put out a very apologetic statement saying that he apologised for, you know, if he had unintentionally breached the guidelines. Of course, he's still there. The senior judges met on Monday, or they certainly discussed it, might have been a call or whatever, and they have agreed that Susan Denham would come in and conduct this report with specific things that she's looking at as to whether he should have accepted the invitation and so on. Also looking at the Judicial Conduct Committee and I suppose, you know, looking around the Judicial Conduct Act. Now, what's going to happen? There's a few things at play here. How long is it going to take? Well, that depends on who you talk to. Official sources are telling me they would expect it more around the end of September. Now, by that stage, there might be a hope that some of the heat had gone out of the controversy. I've talked to some legal sources this morning. They feel that there's a lot of pressure on to get it done sooner than that. However, if Susan Denham was to draw up some sort of guidelines around this kind of thing, because there aren't really any guidelines, then it would take her longer than a couple of days. So there's a few things at play there. Also, I'm told we could expect within what Susan Denham is looking at really a kind of a reprimand for the government in some way. Now, obviously, there's the separation of powers, but she is a retired judge. But I understand that there's annoyance that the particular part of the Judicial Conduct Act had not been commenced, so that this Judicial Conduct Committee, which should be in place, setting out exactly how judges kind of regulate themselves and dealing with situations exactly like this, that should be up and running by now, but it quite simply isn't.
And do we know why it wasn't? Because we were in this kind of strange place where there was no real idea of how this was going to be dealt with.
Well, the committee has sort of been set up and people have been appointed, but officially it hasn't been commenced under the Act. I think it's to do with the minister, you know, sort of signing the statutory instrument or something along those lines to actually absolutely officially put it in place. And I think there's some annoyance around that. There's a sense in terms of Seamus Wolfe that maybe if he survives past this weekend, that the heat might go out of it. We've got the schools going back. You've got the Leaving Cert calculated grades. You've got COVID, all the rest of it. It might take the heat out of it a little bit.
But then I suppose, will opposition parties be picking it up in the Dáil, I wonder, in the next week or two?
Oh, I think definitely we've had, you know, politicians have generally stressed, oh, they're careful about the separation of powers, but people have asked him to consider his position, certainly in the opposition benches. There was an interesting comment from Jim O'Callaghan within Fianna Fáil, who said that the judge's attendance at such an event was an interference in the separation of powers. Now, I think that was quite a bold statement from Jim O'Callaghan, and he went quite far with that.
Who's a barrister, of course.
Who is a barrister, a senior counsel. Mm. And the Taoiseach said that Seamus Woolf shouldn't have been there. So there has been criticism of him at the highest level, but we'll have to see how this plays out.
Now, the other issue, of course, is that there's a new agriculture minister position up for grabs. Not one, but two, but three. The third that will be up for grabs, I suppose, in just a number of weeks, really, after Barry Cowan was first appointed, lost his position, then Dara Cleary stood down after the Gulf Gate. Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach, is currently sort of standing in, but that's not really helping. When you hear from farmers' groups, they're not happy about that, so they want somebody in position. Do we have any idea who it might be, or when we'll hear who it will be?
I think we'll hear next Wednesday officially. It's going to be, you know, it
first
has to be voted on the Dáil. Yeah. Now, there's just a quick sidebar on the Dáil. There's a bit of a row about that because the government want the Dáil just to come back for half a day next Wednesday. Opposition not happy about that. It'll be sorted out tomorrow at the business committee. But in terms of name going around, it's a Fianna Fáil appointee. Charlie McConnellogue is the obvious person, I think, because he has held the agriculture portfolio within Fianna Fáil. He could hit the ground running, as you say, third time lucky. You know, they need to get this right and somebody needs to do the job well. That would be an elevation for him from the junior ranks. Then who could you see going into the law reform position? A few names doing the rounds. James Lawless, himself a qualified barrister, would fit well. Niamh Smith is another person. Anne Rabbit is also another name, and she's also been mentioned, I suppose, in connection with the senior role.
So look, lots to get back to, I suppose, once the Dáil gets back in position next week. But for now, that's it from us. Very much hope you enjoyed this podcast, an earlier edition of the podcast. We thought we'd be back in a couple of weeks, but with everything that went on, we thought we'd come back in today. Please subscribe. You can leave a review and join us again. From me, Maggie Doyle, and Sandra Hurley, thanks very much for listening.